Chapter 19. Saturday turns out to be a busy day. After breakfast, Laura drags Stiles out into the backyard and starts teaching him self-defense. "We're going to do it the quick and dirty way," she says, "which means no holds barred. Hair pulling, biting, the whole 9 yards."
"I can get behind that," Stiles says.
Even so, he's not very good at it. He never seems to know where all his limbs are at any given point. Laura is endlessly patient with him, teaching him how to block and where he should be looking, and bruising him as little as possible. He's discouraged at the end, despite her pep talk. Derek wants to get his mind off it, so he drags him out of the house to go see a movie. They manage to get through this without being thrown out of the theater for public indecency, but it's close. Stiles thinks he should be rewarded just for agreeing to train with Laura at all, and it's difficult to argue with him. After that, they go visit Scott, because he had a bad asthma attack and wound up in the emergency room, and Stiles always visits him when he's in the emergency room. Scott's so glad to see that they worked things out that he nearly works himself into another asthma attack, and Melissa throws them out. It's only after dinner that Derek manages to get Stiles by himself again, up in his bedroom with the door closed so nobody can overhear. He's not sure exactly how to approach the topic of what Stiles had said that morning about being a burden, or the fact that Stiles thinks it's a problem that he needed help. No matter how he comes at it, it's going to be awkward and set Stiles on edge, but Derek can't help but feel that the longer he waits, the longer it sits in Stiles' head, the worse it will be. Derek had learned that lesson himself when he was younger. Waiting always makes things worse. So he takes a deep breath and just puts it out there. "I wanted to talk to you about something you said this morning, after breakfast, while we were talking about school."
"What about it?" Stiles asks, the very picture of nonchalance, even though his heartbeat speeds up considerably. He's flopped in the armchair by Derek's bed, knees over one of the arms so his feet dangle over the side. Derek drops down onto the bed facing him with a bounce and pretends he can't hear the increase in heart rate. Stiles is human and new to the pack. It wouldn't be fair to use anything but what another human could see. He looks over at Stiles, sprawled across the chair that his mother and father and sometimes even Uncle Peter would spend hours sitting in when he had come home from the hospital and was still trapped in bed, trapped in a broken-down body. They never sprawled. Cora did. Sometimes she would crawl up onto his bed and take up the space he wasn't using and listen while his parents read to him. Laura always slouched. They would play board games, and later she helped him walk and relearn how to use muscles that he'd forgotten were even there. She would clean things up when he dropped them, because he was just too clumsy or weak to manage what he had intended. Then there were those times when he would trip and fall, and the pain would make him sick, and he would just refuse to move from the floor. So he looks at Stiles in that chair with all of these memories, and realizes that they aren't actually all bad. It was his pack, and they loved him. He suddenly knows how he's at least going to try to talk sense into Stiles. "About how you're a burden and you're sorry." Now Stiles really goes tense, though it shows more in his jaw than anything else because of the way he's sprawled out. "Wow, I'm suddenly realizing that this is a conversation I have no interest in taking part in." Derek nods. "I know. It's not one I'm super eager to have either, so please don't punch me, but I think it's important."
"Well, say what you have to say, then," Stiles says, studying the wall just over Derek's shoulder. Derek will take it.
"You aren't a burden to the pack. Yes, you did need help, and maybe you still do or will in the future, and you'll get it without question. But you're by far not the first or only person in the pack to need help, and you won't be the last. The only way you would be a burden would be if you took without giving back. And if you didn't care about the effort others were putting in, if you refused to help when others needed it, that's a burden, but that's not you."
With that, Derek stops and hopes that it's enough to actually get through.
"Okie dokie," Stiles says. "We done here?"
Derek's eyebrows hike up involuntarily. Gee, no, he says, matching his tone to Styles. Exactly what part of that are you disagreeing with internally but don't want to argue with? Styles' gaze slides to the side, but he huffs out a sigh. It's not that you're wrong, or even that I disagree with you, he says. Maybe I could have handled it better. I mean, I sort of let the whole thing get out of control when, if I had told you or my dad earlier, it would have been easier to take care of. But it's not that. It's... His voice trails off, and there's that bitter smell of humiliation and shame again that Derek is beginning to recognize whenever Styles comes into contact with Talia. He doesn't want to call him on that, so he says, "It's that you needed more than your dad's help." "It's that your mom hates me enough already, okay?" Styles says abruptly. "And now she had to go rescue me. From my school teachers. Jesus. As if she didn't think I was pathetic enough." "My mother doesn't hate you," Derek says, then concedes, "You may rub her the wrong way a bit, but she does the same to you, and I promise that she doesn't think you're pathetic. She's dealt with people your age that were way less able to handle themselves than you and needed a lot more help." Styles rubs both hands over his hair and says, "Derek, how would your mother even know that I rub her the wrong way? She does her best to avoid me, and when we're in the same room, she'll barely talk to me. She's hated me from day one because she thinks I'm not good enough for you, and nothing's ever going to change that. So can we just not with this bullshit, please?" Derek sort of shrinks in a little. "Part of that is my fault. For a long time, I was so angry that any time she even looked at you, I was ready to go for her throat." In the aftermath, he's a bit ashamed of himself for that. Not for defending his mate, but for not thinking about what that would have done to the rest of the pack. "And part of it's because she knows she makes you uncomfortable, so she's trying to stay out of your way." "Oh, well, that makes it all better," Styles says, the sarcasm in his voice heavier than usual. "She's not avoiding me because she dislikes me. She's doing it because she thinks I'm too pathetic to put up with her being around." Derek grinds his teeth, wishing he could dig his claws into something to relieve his frustration. "What exactly makes a person pathetic?" he demands. "Oh my God, do you want a fucking list?" Styles lurches out of his chair and starts pacing around the room, arms folded tight to his chest. "Let's see. Getting egged in the parking lot, having to walk to buy spark plugs at 6 in the morning, needing Peter to tell off some stupid grocery store clerk because I couldn't do it myself, failing all my classes because I couldn't find a way to make the teachers accept my work, or how about being too scared and self-esteem deprived to accept the best thing that's ever happened to me without making him jump through hoops for 3 months first? Jesus, if I were you, I'd fucking hate me for that." "You needed help. It's not a fucking crime, and it doesn't make you pathetic. All it means is that you needed help." Derek waves his hands and adds, "And in this case, it also means that we're surrounded by racist assholes. But that isn't on you." He rolls off the bed, needing to move as much as Styles does. He wants to shift and run, but he wants to do it with Styles, even with Styles' 2 human legs. To just leave the house for the forest and move until they've run so much that they've left the anger and hurt and nervous energy behind. But he can't and won't until they've worked through this, so Derek paces by the windows, leaving Styles his space. "Jesus, Styles, this went so badly from the start that you had every right to do what you did. And let's be honest, I am awkward as fuck. I have no idea what I'm doing. So even if you had just accepted, it's not like everything would have fallen magically into place. Yes, you're the right person, but that doesn't mean we knew each other, so cut yourself some slack." "Why don't you cut me some slack?" Styles retorts. "And accept the fact that you're not going to fix my self-esteem overnight, that I might just feel awkward and uncomfortable around your mother, that I let you guys help even though it made me feel like a loser." "I'm not asking you to get along with my mother. I haven't. All I've done is refuse to agree when you say she hates you. That's all." Look, you said I wasn't a burden. I said okay, but you kept pushing. You couldn't just let me have my own insecurities and keep them to myself. Because you said it in a way that meant... Derek takes a deep breath and forces himself to stop. Arguing about this isn't helping, and it isn't gaining him anything. He can't win like this because Styles isn't ready. The hoops that Styles had made him jump through had often taught him valuable things about Styles before he tripped over new obstacles. Direct opposition isn't the way to go, so he takes a step back, physically backing off. That's the wolf in him giving way. Fine. I don't like that you're that hard on yourself, but I'm not you, so I'll try to keep from pushing my opinions on you, okay? Fine. Styles turns an angry glare on him, then throws his hands up in a gesture more of a flail than anything else and says, "See, I'm being an asshole to you right now!" He sounds more exasperated than anything else. Derek can't help it. He lets out a chuckle. "Then cut it out, asshole," he says, and then Styles is laughing too. "Just let me apologize for having been a gigantic dick to you, okay?" Styles says. Derek leans over and kisses him on the crown of the head. "Apology accepted. Now let's just get out of here for a while." "And go where?" Styles asks, somewhat skeptically. "I don't know. Out, around, driving." Styles gives him a suspicious look. "Is this some plan to get me alone somewhere that you can steal my virtue?" Derek returns the look steadily. "Absolutely." "Yes!" Styles does a double fist pump. "No take-backs!" Derek purses his lips, considering the hole he just dug for himself. "Fine, but I may take as long as I want to find that perfect place for us to be alone, so that I may steal your virtue." Styles gives him a narrow-eyed stare. "I will pee on all the things you love." "What the hell is wrong with you?" Derek points to the door. "Out, go." "You're stuck with me now, buddy," Styles says, grabbing Derek by the hand and towing him out of the room. "Be careful what you wish for." Derek allows Styles to tow him down the hall. "I don't want to give you back. I just don't want you peeing on my sisters." "What?" Two outraged, feminine voices come from different corners of the house. "Don't mind him, he's delirious with love," Styles shouts back. "And you think that's what I would come up with?" Derek asks, with fake indignation. "I'm awkward, not incompetent." Styles just rolls his eyes, tugging him along. "Come on, we have important things to do. If that search for the perfect place to steal my virtue is going to take a long time, we'd better get started right away." "Obviously." Derek speeds up enough so that now he's the one tugging along Styles, although he's careful, knowing how prone Styles is to taking headers over nothing. They go out to the Camaro, and Styles slouches comfortably in the passenger seat. It's fully dark, although the moon is shining brightly, and Styles starts down the narrow country road that leads to the house. Derek rolls down his own window to let in the fresh air. Normally, he's more than happy to have Styles' scent slowly working its way into the leather interior of his car, but he's still restless, and the moving air will help. Derek just drives for a while, through back roads and the edges of town, slowing occasionally now and again when he can smell a deer too close to the road for his liking. Styles, he notices, sort of settles into a state of calm, which is good, exactly what he was hoping for both of them. But Derek still wants to run. Not to escape, the way he had earlier, but at the same time he had become keyed up and wasn't switching down. Maybe it's the waxing moon, less than a week from full. Normally he would just run, but he doesn't want to leave Styles. Not so soon. Not yet. Sometimes he would play with other pack members to burn off energy, and it occurs to him that this, at least, was still an option. So he turns the car with the destination finally in mind. Soon he's parking at one of the athletic fields for the high school. Not Styles High School, but Cora's, and the one that Derek and Laura had both graduated from. "Come on." Styles is giving him a somewhat surprised look. "Kinky," he says, with an approving nod. Derek looks at him and says, "I'll have to remember that you have a thing for outdoor sex.
but I'm still looking for the right place, and this isn't it, so come on.
With a huff, Stiles follows.
What are we doing here?
You'll see, Derek says, and grins. He leads Stiles out onto the field where there are no shadows, and he's sure that humans can see at night.
Wait here, I'll be right back.
He pauses then, thinking of all the cruel jokes that have been played on Stiles in or around a school recently.
I promise, nothing bad.
He leans in to kiss Stiles on the cheek before loping off towards the school. A couple of minutes later, he comes back carrying a lacrosse stick and a ball, which he hands to Stiles. Only one stick, nothing for himself.
We are going to play fetch, because I need to run.
Something awful, he adds, towing off his shoes.
You want me to play fetch, Stiles says skeptically.
With you?
Yes, Derek nods. Absolutely.
The sneakers are kicked off, socks follow, and then he drops his watch into a sneaker.
Stiles frowns.
You're doing this because I can't run with you.
Derek stops right before stripping off his shirt, though he seems untroubled by the statement.
Partly. If it was daylight, you could. We could run in the woods by the house. But it's too dark for you, so we'll play where you can see.
He just gives a shrug, because to him it isn't an issue. Humans don't have the same night vision, so when there are humans in the pack, accommodations are made.
But Stiles is still frowning.
Even if it was daylight, I wouldn't be able to keep up with you.
So, the only time speed is an issue is when we're running prey.
But you said that you wanted to run, not jog or stroll casually through the forest.
I do, so I found a game we could play. If we were in the woods, I might run ahead and circle back sometimes.
Derek shakes his head a little and says,
Don't talk about it like I'm pandering to you. It's a good compromise.
Well, relationships are all about compromise, Stiles agrees.
Right. Derek strips off his shirt and tosses it onto his shoes. So get ready to throw the ball.
Are you kidding me? Stiles says. You're getting naked and you want me to fuck that? I am going to climb you like a tree.
He starts towards Derek with purpose, clearly intending to match actions to words.
No, playing fetch.
Derek shucks off his jeans and boxers with economical swiftness. By the time Stiles gets his hands on him, he's grasping at fur. Stiles slumps backwards dramatically.
You're the actual worst, I swear to God.
Derek plants one large, heavy black paw on Stiles' shoulder and gives him a kiss, all the way up to the side of his face. Then he bounces backwards to wait to see what Stiles will do, although his wagging tail gives away his excitement. He could stop it if he put the effort in, but it's rarely worth it.
Fine, you overgrown fuzz bucket, Stiles says, getting to his feet and throwing the lacrosse ball as hard as he can.
He has a fairly decent arm, and it goes quite a ways. Derek nearly trips over his own hind legs in his scramble to turn, but he manages to stay on his feet and takes off. It hits the ground, but he catches it on the second bounce. He sees no reason to put anything but normal wolf speed behind his run. Then he pelts back to Stiles with the ball held in his teeth and sits in front of him with a stupid grin on his face.
Wow, Stiles says. It's amazing how silly this feels. I think it's actually curing my overwhelming libido.
Derek cocks his head and shrugs a little, as if to say that silly is fine.
Yeah, sure, Stiles says, and throws the ball again.
Stiles makes it abundantly clear to the pack that breakfast is going to be a weekend thing. If anyone tries to approach him about making food before 10 a.m., he will bite heads off. When the alarm clock on his phone goes off at 6 a.m. on Monday morning, Derek groans and rolls over, pulling the blankets over his head. There's getting up early, and then there's getting up high school early. But he's up by the time Stiles has managed to get out of bed, dress himself, and stagger downstairs. Stiles' Jeep is still at the Stilinski house, so Derek had offered to drive him to school, and Stiles had somewhat gleefully taken him up on the offer. Derek can tell from his tone that this won't just be a quick drop-off, and he has a hard time arguing. So Derek grabs his keys and his leather jacket,
but instead of swinging the jacket on like he would normally, he holds it out to Styles. "Oh my God," Styles says, clasping his hands in front of himself. "Did I get transported to a 50s movie?" "No, because I'm pretty sure there's nothing you could do to make me reenact Greased Lightning or wear leather pants that are so tight that I'd have to be sewn into them." He slowly pulls the jacket away. "Are you saying you don't want it?" "You're ruining so many of my fantasies right now, I'll have you know," Styles says. "Of course I want it. Gimme." Derek hands it over. "What fantasies? Me in musicals or me in leather pants?" "Can't both be true?" Styles asks. He pulls the jacket on. It's actually only a little too big for him, broad in the shoulders by a couple inches. He spins around and says, "How's it look?" "Well, I'd lick you." Derek gives him a small smile, which seems bigger than it used to be. "And the one about the musicals can't be true. It will never be true. Now we'd better hurry up if you want time to make out in front of the school." Styles does a fist pump like he can't believe this is happening to him, then scrambles to the car. "Oh man, today is going to be so much fun," he says. "I'm going to hand in all my assignments with the biggest shit-eating grin, I swear to God." Derek waits until the doors are closed and then scents the air. Styles is happy, and it's a scent he'd really like to get used to. The close quarters of the car make it more potent. "Have Scott take pictures." "I so will," Styles says, "and I'm going to wear the jacket all day, even though it's like 80 degrees out, and Jackson's going to bark with jealousy. I hope he gets it on his shoes." "Now, which one is Jackson?" Derek asks as he drives down the access road that leads to the main road. "Oh, he's my nemesis," Styles says, "since first grade. See, for a really long time I had a crush on his girlfriend, so he took it upon himself to humiliate me at every turn. We've had some good times together, what with him dunking my head in toilets and taking my lunch money and basically being untouchable because his dad is the district attorney." "Uh-huh. He sounds like a real peach. He had better not puke on you or touch you." "I'm pretty sure he won't even go near me," Styles says cheerfully. "Given how smug Peter looked at breakfast yesterday, I'm pretty sure Jackson is going to pretend I don't even exist." "Ah." Derek's grin is sudden and very definitely borders on feral. "Excellent. I sort of want to know what Uncle P did," Styles says thoughtfully, "but I also think it might send me screaming into the night." Derek blinks at the nickname that Styles has apparently decided to give to his uncle. It's between Styles and Peter. "He most likely didn't actually do much. It's usually the promise of what he will do if the desired results aren't seen. And Peter, he has a way about him when he's riled up. You said you saw him talk to a guy at the grocery store?" "Oh yeah," Styles says with a nod. "It was fucking awesome and also scary as fuck." "Yeah, Peter." Derek's tone has a certain "what can you do" quality to it. "He was better at turning it on and off before, just before. But it was always there. That sort of thing is always with some of us." Styles nods and changes the subject, because it's really too early in the morning to talk about the fire, or Peter's insanity, or even the people who have been tormenting him. The ride only takes about 10 minutes, and when Derek's Camaro pulls up in front of the school, everyone turns and stares. People just stop in their tracks. Scott is sitting on top of the low stone wall, holding his phone in one hand, obviously prepared to catch the reactions of their classmates. Derek looks out the window. "Wow, that's just... I don't even know." He shakes his head a little. "Come on, I think you need a thorough kiss goodbye before school. I need something to get me through my day, and there's clearly not enough room in the car." "Clearly," Styles says, amused, but he swings the door open and gets out. It takes a little effort, since the Camaro is so low slung and Styles has ridiculous gazelle legs, but he manages. At the sight of the bruises and the leather jacket, even more people stop to gawk, some of them more surreptitiously than others. Derek flows out of the car with nothing short of animal grace, though a lot of that is simple practice. and swings the door shut. He doesn't want the scent of random, startled, horny, and almost angrily jealous teenagers to taint Styles' scent in his car. He circles around to Styles' side of the car, where he's waiting, then picks him up by the waist and sits him down on the hood of the car by the windshield, with Styles' long legs hanging down to either side of his hips. "Okay, yes," Styles says, in that endearing, "I can't quite not comment on this" way he has, as his scent turns from content and amused to excited and aroused in about 1/10 of a second. He winds an arm around Derek's waist, tilting his chin up for the kiss that's sure to follow. Derek smiles at him right before their lips touch, and it's a deep, if not a hard, kiss. He's still watching out for those bruises, after all. After a long moment, Derek lets the kiss go in exchange for burying his nose in the crook of Styles' neck. It's a move that's blatantly werewolf, and given the way they're holding each other, just as intimate to a mated pair as kissing. Styles lets out a little noise, eyes fluttering shut and one hand cupping the back of Derek's neck. He tries to squirm his way closer to Derek, but the werewolf just presses him back against the windshield, pinning him there. "When you can beat up some of these guys in a dark parking lot," Derek says right into his ear, "then you can do that." "Ugh, you're the worst," Styles says, somewhat breathlessly, biting at Derek's jaw since that's what's closest to his mouth. "Stop bitching and kiss me, okay?"
"I was trying before you had to," Styles says, but then gets distracted by how close Derek's mouth is to his, and just lunges forward, one hand fisting in the back of Derek's shirt, and one leg coming up to hook around Derek's waist. It's awkward as hell, and mainly just for show, and indeed a gasp comes from the crowd of watching teenagers. Derek laughs into the kiss, returning it with enthusiasm. How long before faculty complains? "I suppose I should be trying to stay out of trouble after everything that's happened," Styles says, rather reluctantly dropping his foot back to the ground. Derek lets go of his hip with one hand and brings it up to run his thumb under Styles' eyes and across his cheek. It's a motion partly to put some distance between their faces so he couldn't kiss Styles again, and partly because he just wants to touch Styles, wants to feel the warmth of a living body under his hand and leave a tiny bit of his scent behind as a message that he had been there. Not necessarily as a mark of ownership, but more as a reassurance. Your pack is there, if you need them. Styles had noticed by now that they all do that, just constantly cuddle up to each other and touch each other, while even passing through rooms if it was convenient. "Holy hell," Styles breathes out, just staring at Derek's face in a manner that would have seemed far too intimate 48 hours earlier. And you want me to go to school now?" The werewolf huffs out a little laugh, but it's at the situation, not at Styles. He rests his forehead against the younger man's. "I think both our parents would appreciate it after the trouble they went through, but I'll see if I can get the afternoon off from work. I'll pick you up and we can have the rest of the day, okay?" "Okay," Styles swallows and nods. "And then we can go make out in your car somewhere, right? Because that was the other thing I was thinking about the day you chose me, that this would be an awesome car to have makeouts in." Derek's eyebrows hike up, and he takes a step back, examining Styles, then leaning back to look the car over. "You sure about that? Your legs are sort of amazingly long. I don't know that we'd have room."
"Oh no, I'd have to be in your lap or something," Styles says.
"Well, in that case, I think it could be arranged."
"It could be arranged right now," Styles says, and then the first bell rings. "Fuck." Derek picks him up and sets him on his feet. "Go." He makes a shooing motion with his hands. "I'll pick you up at the end of the day."
"Okay, and then I'll get revenge for the fact that you just shooed me. What the actual fuck?" Styles grumbles, but he heads towards the school. The gawking teenagers part like the Red Sea, half of them staring at Styles, the other half still staring at Derek. Styles turns just as he reaches the school,
thrusts both fists into the air and shouts, "Thank you! We'll be here all week!" Derek shakes his head, but decides to play it up for Stiles. He takes a bow. Then he turns and gets back in the car, to the buzzing sound of whispers and gossip behind him. It's not all complimentary, and it takes effort to drive away. Stiles will be okay. And if not, well, now he has the legal right to protect him. In any case, it would take a great deal to ruin his mood. He stops for a quick breakfast before heading to work. It's early, but if he's going to leave early, that will help. His co-workers seem frankly freaked out by the fact that he's actually smiling, and his boss gives him a suspicious look, clearly wondering if he's on drugs, before agreeing that he can leave a little early as long as all his routine work is done. Derek agrees and devotes himself to it. It's been about 2 hours when he smells the familiar scent of Pat behind him, and turns to see Peter examining a rose bush in a somewhat absent sort of way. "Anson Jones," Derek supplies, from where he's kneeling in amongst a bunch of tomato plants. He doesn't bother to ask Peter why he's there, knowing that his uncle will get to it in his own time. Given recent events, he suspects it has something to do with Stiles, but there's no use in pushing. For the first time in a long time, Peter looks honestly perplexed. "Beg pardon?" "The rose. It's an Anson Jones." Derek blinks at his uncle. He's not used to causing that look. "Ah, of course." Peter leans down to smell the flower, then says, "I have something for you," and holds up a jump drive. "What is it?" Derek asks warily, but he carelessly wipes a hand off on the hem of his shirt before reaching out to take it. "Is it something I actually want?" Peter shrugs. "It's a recording of a private conversation Stiles had with his friend Scott about how much he'd like to climb you like a tree." Derek's eyes narrow. "If it's private, why is there a recording of it? Scott wouldn't do that. I've met him. And why do you have it?" Peter gives him a particularly toothy grin. "I got it from Jackson. You've heard about Jackson, I assume. He assures me that this is the only copy. He was quite adamant about it." "Yeah," Derek says, his smile suddenly matching Peter's. "Stiles mentioned Jackson this morning. Said he was going to puke with jealousy. He also said that Jackson was his nemesis." He actually used the word nemesis. He shakes his head, clearly thinking about how ridiculous Stiles is. "Apparently there's a long-standing relationship based on this kid humiliating Stiles, and that he thinks he's untouchable because he's the DA's son. I'm assuming you demonstrated how mistaken he was in thinking he was untouchable?" Peter agrees, without giving detail, which Derek thinks is probably a good thing, really. "You may be interested to know that although you have not heard the recording, everyone at Stiles School has. They played it over the intercom." Derek's hand starts to tighten around the jump drive, but he stops before crushing it, and the anger comes out as a brief show of claws instead. He normally keeps very tight control over physical displays of his temper like that. It makes interacting with humans difficult. But this is his mate they're talking about, and he's had the privilege of saying that for less than 72 hours. He's still a little on edge. "When did they hear this?" "The first day Stiles came to the house by himself. He was upset." Peter tilts his head to one side and adds, in case Derek can't remember exactly, "the first day he let you scent mark him." Derek does remember. He remembers everything about that night, how nervous Stiles was, and how much he seemed to want, like maybe he'd had another round of abuse at school from everyone telling him that Derek wouldn't want him, couldn't want him. "I can't listen to it. It's private. Even if half the damned world has heard it, I haven't, and that will be important to him. But I don't want to let it go, either." "Then counter it," Peter says with a shrug. "Go on the intercom and tell the entire school about all the things you like so very much about your Stiles." Derek considers this, particularly how much Styles had seemed to enjoy their public spectacle that morning, and the gestures of protection, now that he knows they're genuine. I could do that. He pauses, then adds, Have you heard it? Yes, Peter says, raising an eyebrow as if wondering if Derek will object. Peter cares too much for Styles for it to have been an invasion of privacy just for the sake of curiosity. Then tell me exactly what I need to say for best effect. Peter does. By the end of it, Derek's cheeks are flushed pink. It's somewhat alarming to know that his uncle has actually paid that much attention to Styles' physique, or more specifically, to which parts of it Derek himself finds most appealing. Jesus Christ, he mutters. Do you know when they played it? He asks, and Peter shrugs. Oh well, I won't do it today anyway. Better let him have a day before we throw anything new into the mix. Derek's quiet for a minute. Thank you for taking care of those kids. My pleasure, Peter says, and the glint in his eyes shows that he means it 100%. Tom takes a day to think about the best way to approach Talia with his concerns. It's obvious that they can't do it at the Hale House, where there would be far too many listening ears, and he doesn't really want to do it over the telephone. So he calls her secretary first thing on Monday morning and asks if there would be a time he could stop by, hoping that Talia is not terribly busy. As it turns out, she has a hearing at 9, but expects to be back in the office by 10:30. Then she has a meeting at 11. The secretary says she'll probably be fairly busy, but should have a few minutes. Tom inquires about lunch instead, and is told that Talia usually works through lunch, but might be better inclined towards company. That works better for Tom, so he says he'll stop by around 12:30, at which point her meeting should be over. The secretary shows him into her office, which is surprisingly small for such a high-powered lawyer, and surprisingly cluttered for someone so organized. She's halfway through a tuna salad sandwich. Tom can't help but bite his lip, because he immediately recognizes the handwriting on the brown paper bag as Styles. Talia stands up when he comes in, shakes his hand, and says, Sorry about everything, with a vague gesture at the clutter, the sandwich, and the work she's clearly in the middle of doing. Tom shrugs. If I promise not to say anything about the state of your office, do you promise never to tell Styles if you see me eating donuts at the station? His tone is merely amused. It may not have been what he expected. But the clutter in her office is nobody's business besides her own. Plus, it's best to start straight in with negotiations. That's always the best way to deal with things when dealing with alphas. Square deal, she says, and waves at one of the chairs. What can I do for you? The sheriff sits down across from her. It's actually more in what I'm trying to do for you, which is to prevent all of us from going prematurely gray. He leans back, folding his hands over his stomach. I was actually hoping to talk to you about Styles. Talia sighs. I suppose saying what now would make me a terrible person. That gets a laugh out of Tom. No, that just means you're firmly in touch with reality. Excellent. Talia takes a bite out of her sandwich. Coffee? Please. He finds himself jealous of the lack of vegetable sticks in Talia's lunch. Talia asks if he wants anything in it, but of course Tom takes his coffee black because that's how it is at the station. A moment later, the secretary comes in with a large mug full of coffee that is at least 8 times better than what he ever gets at the station. It's strange having coffee that's not burned. All right, the suspense is killing me, Talia says. I figured I might offer some advice on how to make interactions with Styles run a little more smoothly, Tom says, diplomatically not adding, because from what I've seen so far, they're like fingers on a chalkboard. Talia lets out a sigh. It's not easy having two alphas in the same house. You should have seen the warfare when Laura was a teenager. I think we spent most of her 15th year alternately screaming at each other, or giving each other the cold shoulder. Of course, I can't exactly handle things with your son the same way. Yeah, as much as I have sympathy for how that went for you two, that won't work with Styles. He takes another sip of the coffee. As you've seen, Styles plays the long game, and despite how expressive he seems, he actually keeps his cards pretty close to the vest, especially around people he's not completely comfortable with, so temper won't really get vented and cleared up. Talia takes another bite of her sandwich and gestures for him to continue. You can't be confrontational with Styles. You can't tell, order, demand, or inform him of how it's going to be, because what you'll end up with is him telling you how it's going to be, and also where you can stick it. And you just let him do what he wants? Talia's trying to hide it, but she's clearly appalled by the very concept. No, do I look stupid or insane? Tom almost laughs. It's just better to inform him of what you want and why you want it. That makes it clear that you aren't exactly making a suggestion, but it cuts down on his anxiety. Of course, it occasionally gives him a chance to concoct a good lie, but you can't win them all. He waits to see if Talia is on board. I suppose. She looks a little skeptical, but at least open-minded about the idea. Like Saturday after breakfast. Great example. That could have gone better. Oh, for the love of... All I told him to do was sit down. From the look he gave me, you'd think I told him to club a baby seal. Tom shakes his head and takes another drink of his coffee. Look at it from his standpoint. He doesn't know you very well. He doesn't know how to read you. Historically, the two of you don't get along, but now you're his alpha, so blowing you off isn't an option. You said, sit down, we have some things to discuss. And what he understands is that you backed him into a corner, and now he's about to get an earful of any number of unpleasant topics. Talia practically throws her hands up in despair. And my husband wonders why I've just been avoiding him altogether. I never said he was easy to deal with, Tom says. But he isn't that difficult either. I do appreciate the fact that you're trying. The two easiest things to do are give him an out so he doesn't feel trapped, and disarm him by explaining. Don't be ambiguous. Things to discuss would be scary as hell to a grown man, let alone a teenager who spent the last 3 months being bullied. He sat down after I told him there were papers to go over. That wasn't because I'm his father. It's because he felt more comfortable knowing what he was dealing with. All right, Talia sighs. I'll try to keep it in mind. I don't promise I'll be any good at it, but I suppose I can promise that when I forget and he gets snotty, I won't get angry with him. Or at least I'll try to contain my anger. The sheriff nods. Thanks. He's quiet for a moment. Here's something to think about. Something to help you understand the core of him. Do you know what his first word was after Mama and Dada? I couldn't begin to guess, Talia replies. It was why. He's smiling, clearly looking back on the memory with fondness. I told Claudia I wasn't coming home from work. Oh, come on, he couldn't have been... I mean, he didn't really... Talia slumps in defeat. I guess I'm just lucky it wasn't no. That was Laura's. Tom laughs. I'm sorry, he says, regaining his composure, although it takes a moment. I mean, it wasn't even about being a brat. He's just honestly that inquisitive. You ever see a kid read an entire encyclopedia just for fun? Now that Wikipedia has been invented, I'm surprised he ever leaves his computer. He finishes the coffee. What was Derek's? Up. Talia smiles at the memory. He was always tugging my skirt or the cuff of Aaron's pants and going, up, up. Yeah, he hasn't really lost that, has he? Tom says, thinking of how desperately earnest Derek had been while asking for his help in courting Styles. Not even a little, Talia says. As it may be relevant to the conversation, I should probably admit that my first word was mine. That gets another snort of laughter from the sheriff. Always an alpha, huh? I guess mine was related to food somehow. Styles would be unsurprised, but possibly horrified. Talia shakes her head in amusement. Aaron used to say that the way Laura and I fought when she was a teenager could basically be summed up that way. Mine! No! Mine! No! Tom laughs even harder at this. I'm sorry, he says, clearly trying not to laugh at her. Talia huffs. It's funny now. Less so then. Thank God she mellowed out when she got a little older. No, I can't imagine it was funny at all back then. Two alpha personalities butting heads, but the pull of the pack not letting them have much space. He turns his coffee mug around in his hands, glad to have a prop to keep busy with. That's something Styles got from him, the need not to have idle hands. Derek must have hated it. Someone whose first word was up doesn't strike me as the sort who handles family strife well. Not at all, Talia agrees, and takes another bite of her sandwich. Aaron used to take him and Cora running whenever Laura and I got into it too badly. And David, too, she adds briskly. Tom has to resist the urge to reach out and try to offer some sort of comfort. He knows the sort of hole the loss of just one family member had left in him and his son. He can't imagine what it must have been like to lose half the family, half the pack, when there are actual psychic bonds of a sort, not to mention the biological wiring that made the wolf part of these people. That closeness is the only thing that really makes Tom wary of Styles having joined a pack. He worries about what any sort of loss would do to his son. On the other hand, that closeness will also make him happy, and he won't stand in the way of that. After a moment, he mentally shakes himself back to the present. Now isn't the time for heavy, depressing introspection. Talia will be able to scent his mood, and that isn't the tone he wants for this conversation. I almost shudder to think, what was Peter's first word? Talia's face takes on a wryly, amused expression. I don't think I recall exactly, but it was something along the lines of, I'm sorry, Father, but I respectfully disagree. I definitely had that toy before Talia did. Tom lets out a bark of laughter. Are you kidding me? Now Talia is laughing, too. No, I'm pretty sure Peter skipped baby talk and went straight on to full academic sentences. Of course, this is my memory of things, and I would have been about 6 years old. And I'm pretty sure my response was, mine! Oh, wait, Peter can have it. Tom can't help but grin at the idea of always the alpha Talia being cowed by her toddler brother. He was terrifying even back then, I take it. My father used to say that of all the things he wondered about our future, the way the pack hierarchy would fall was never something he needed to question. She shakes her head a little. Even as little kids, he knew that I would be the alpha and Peter would be my left hand. It didn't work that way in my generation. Laura was always the clear front runner for the next alpha, but, well, Tyler would have been her left hand, and he died in the fire. And neither Cora nor Derek are really well suited for the position, albeit for very different reasons. So what do you do in a case like this? Or if there's no one suited in the first place? Because I can see what you mean about Derek. He seems to be a fairly gentle soul. I mean, Scott calls him Squirrel Guy because of his propensity to rescue small rodents, for goodness sake. Derek's obviously willing to commit violence for his pack. But the sheriff is pretty sure that being the left hand takes an actual killer instinct. He almost hates to admit it, but he thinks he might see more of that in his own son than he sees in Derek. Talia gives a little shrug. Usually the current left hand picks somebody that he thinks can at least learn the tools of the trade and takes them under his wing. I think Peter's been waiting for Cora to get a little older to see if he'd prefer her over Derek. Cora has the fighting spirit, just not the subtlety. She wore a hat to go spy on Styles at school, Tom says, chuckling. Styles couldn't bear to hurt her feelings by telling her that he'd spotted her almost immediately. Oh, Lord, Talia says, taking a long drink from her iced tea. I heard Derek and Cora arguing about that all weekend. particularly about how Cora had sworn up and down that Styles hadn't noticed her. All the while, Styles was laughing in the corner about how incognito she was not. That gets another chuckle from Tom. To be fair to Cora, Styles is very observant, and nobody else figured out who she was. And he sobers a little. I didn't know it at the time, or at least not the extent of it, but he was being bullied. He was watching everyone like they were lions and he was the antelope. So that didn't help Cora any. Still, the point remains, subtlety, not her strong suit. Ask Styles to give her some pointers. He can get things done quietly when he wants to. He's made a few people miserable in his time for upsetting Scott. He rolls his eyes and adds, "My son, the budding criminal," in a tone that doesn't really sound upset. Talia taps at her desk. It's unusual for a PAC member to hold multiple positions, but not unheard of. But they're usually complementary positions, like the Denmaker and the Peacekeeper. Denmaker and Left Hand are practically polar opposites, but I suppose if anyone was up to that challenge, it would be Styles. She shakes her head a little and adds, "Your son is a study in contradictions." Yes and no. Tom is quiet for a few moments. The skills, the actions, might seem contradictory, but the driving force behind it is the same. He takes care of the people he loves. If that means cooking, he learns to do that. If it means not telling anyone he's being bullied because he's worried about his father's career, he does that. If it means he has to learn about asthma and carry an extra inhaler so he can always be sure Scott's okay, he does that. And if it meant learning to be the left hand so the pack would be safe, it all comes from the same place. "I suppose that does make sense," Talia says, then adds pensively, "Maybe if I try to treat him more like a left hand than a den maker, I'll do better with him." That makes the sheriff curious. "You treat each position a certain way?" "Well, not exactly," Talia says. "It's more like, from a pack member's position, even in other packs, you can assume certain things about their personality, which helps you know how to deal with them. You were talking about Styles being naturally inquisitive. Well, that's something a left hand would be more likely to have than a den maker. But Styles being human and not born into a pack, he won't exactly fall into a position the way a lot of wolves do. He's a little bit of everything, which probably explains why I'm never sure how he'll act on any given day." He's never sure how he'll act on any given day. You know what he asked for his 13th birthday? A file cabinet. Tom gestures to one of the cabinets sitting behind Talia, because he was sick of not being able to keep his research straight and separated. One day it's dinosaurs, the next Norse mythology, a week later erectile dysfunction. I think a lot of things about Styles are like that sometimes. His brain is always working, so no one is exactly sure where he'll be or what sort of conclusions he will have come to by the time he mentally surfaces for air. "He'll keep life interesting, that's for sure," Talia agrees. "If there's ever a dull moment, I recommend getting him immediate medical attention." Talia laughs. "I'll keep that in mind."